Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. We are absolutely packed today from 1 hour. NFL meat sandwich, Greg Cosell. LeBron and the Lakers starts tonight. Dodgers won yesterday. Get to that in a second. We have all sorts of sports. October's an incredible time of the year. Last night was wild drama and great storylines everywhere. So let's talk about, like, this happens every postseason in baseball. There is the controversial play. And it didn't need to be a controversial play. Jose Altuve, last year's MVP, unbelievable talent, at home, hits a 97-mile-an-hour seed over the wall. Mookie Betts outfielder for the Red Sox, probably this year's MVP, arguably. They got two guys that could be for the Red Sox. He goes up. He's about to make a catch and a ball, and the fans, and it's a crazy. And Joe West, the older, heavyset umpire who had a lousy view, came up and said, that is an out because there was fan interference. Okay, first of all, don't blame the fans. If a ball is heading to you and you're a fan at 115 miles an hour, you're going to put your hands out. I don't want to hear anybody blaming a fan. I'm not sure if anybody is, but it's human instinct. Fans, when the ball's hit near the wall and they have front row seats, they reach for the ball. Of course they do. It's going 115 miles an hour. But this never needed to be controversial. Why not just let the entire play out? Let it play out. Never get in the way of great athletes potentially doing great things. There was no reason to make that call. Joe West had a lousy view. Even on replay, I can't tell exactly what happens. If I took 100 calls right now, 50 would say interference, 50 would say not. Everybody in Houston would say home run. Everybody in Boston says they got it right. Now, there is a ground rule double rule in baseball. You can't use it here because the ball didn't hit the ground first. I wish you could split the difference. But the bigger issue is don't get in the way in an NBA Finals. Don't get in the way in the Super Bowl. Don't get in the way in the ALCS of great players doing great stuff. Let it play out and then go to the replay. If you didn't see it in real time, if you didn't see it live, here it is.
Altuve, right field, back there. Betts at the track. He leaps, and it is out. It's off a fan. No, they're saying off of Betts. It is in play. They may be calling it interference. I'm trying to get a read on the right field umpire here. And out is the call. Wow. Wow. Boy, does this game ever start with some controversy. That is a tough, tough call to make.
It didn't need to be made. Let it play out. Use the satellites and the replays later. But you don't stop last year's MVP and this year's MVP in the middle of it. Just a wild scene in Houston. Get out of the way. Let the bird in the sky figure out the rest. Brutal. You ever gone out on a date and the waiter keeps coming over too often? And you're like, dude, come on. You're overwaiting. And the wait staff keeps coming over and keeps coming over. And you're like, I'm trying to create a little momentum here. You can be a waiter and you can get in the way of a date, of a night, of the pace. Joe West got in the way of that thing. Three terrible things happened there. First of all, you stopped a wild, oh my God, play in the ALCS. You stopped it. The second thing is you didn't have a very good view on it. And you still made a call. That's bad. Third, you became the focal point, Joe West, not Mookie Betts and not Jose Altuve. That's the worst of the three. Do you know what the NFL did? The NFL's figured this out. They just let a play go, and then they come back and look at it. But they don't get in the middle of the play. And it took them a while to figure this out in football, but they've figured it out. They're not the waiter that comes up and keeps interrupting. You want more bread? Can you get more water? You could get out of here. I'd be happier.
Anytime you're talking about mentioning an umpire or referee's name
after
a playoff game, something went wrong.
Something went wrong. And the NFL has learned this. and I would say this, if you do this on a Tuesday night in a Denver Nugget Sacramento Kings game, but an umpire and an official has to realize sports rarely gives us superstars in the moment doing super things. You want to be invisible. And unfortunately, Joe West was the most visible. And this is, baseball's already got an action problem due to analytics. Not enough base runners, too many home runs, strikeouts. They've already got an action problem. This was unbelievable action, and you stopped it. It was an OMG moment. You stopped it. And the NFL figured something else out. The NFL had that catch rule for 10 years, and then they just changed the catch rule. And the reason they did is because they wanted to reward great athletes doing great things. You play fantasy football. They want to reward you, the fans. They want to reward the people in the stadium. They didn't want to reward the ground. Nobody buys a jersey and the back of it says, ground. That's my favorite player. Ground. No. It has Julio Jones, Matt Ryan, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Brady. So the NFL said, let's flip the catch rule so the star is who we talk about, not the ground. I mean, we were watching NFL games for a decade talking about the ground. Nobody buys a jersey for the ground. Okay, Dez Bryant is who you should be talking about. In Ted, I spent 4 days talking about the ground in Lambeau. Hard to sell the jersey for the ground. Last night, I'm talking about Joe West. I'm talking about fans. I'm talking about interference. I should be talking about Mookie Betts and Jose Altuve. That's who I should be talking about. And the NFL has figured this out. I mean, it just drives me crazy. And there was no perfect camera angle. And that's the thing in baseball, is that we created all these centers, you know, these umpire centers, these official centers in New York and the NHL, it's in Toronto, and you created them to eliminate these. But the umpires and the officials should get the hell out of the way and let guys do what they do, which is Jose Altuve rakes and Mookie Betts fields. And now it should be noted, I don't think this was early in the game. By the way, Boston's been better defensively. Boston's had the better bullpen. Boston had 108 wins. I think Boston this year is the better team. Like, Houston was the best team in baseball last year. And they've even had a disadvantage. Chris Sale couldn't pitch last night. He was in the hospital. So it's not like everything has gone Boston's way. But Boston made two great plays last night defensively. Betts made one later. Catch at the end of the game. They've had the better defense. They've had the better bullpen. But God, Joe West, yeah, baseball's got an action problem. Don't make it worse. Let stuff play out. Stop coming up to me if you're a waiter. Do you need more bread? I'll flag you down if I do. Trying to connect here with the missus here, okay? Meanwhile, across the street in Houston, the Rockets were terrible. And gave up 131 points, the most points they've given up in the regular season since Mike D'Antoni got there. That's the most. Not so coincidentally, Carmelo Anthony is now a member of the Rockets. Melo arrives, chemistry goes into the toilet, and he doesn't play defense. Here's what's amazing about this. Here is what's amazing about this. Is that Houston does two or three things well. They shoot threes well. Oh, it's the one thing Carmelo can't do. Last year, we gave them credit because they started really finely playing defense. Yeah, he's crappy at that. Well, at least, you know what? Last year, we all worried about Harden and Chris Paul's chemistry. Melo's on his third team in 3 years. It's inexplicable to me. Houston is known as the anti-mid-range jumper team. It's the only thing Melo does. We gave him credit last year because they finally played defense. He's terrible at it. And oh, by the way, the one thing we really worried about the Rockets was chemistry. Chris Paul, Harden worked perfectly. It's probably his number one weakness. Carmelo Anthony has become Will Smith the actor. You know, he does Men in Black, Independence Day. He's got some early success. Carmelo wins a title at Syracuse. He gets the Denver Nuggets to the Western Conference Championship. He has a little success. And 10 years later, we're still living off that. Stop trying to convince me in 2018 Carmelo Anthony's a great player. He's not. You got to shoot threes. He can't. Don't shoot mid-range jumpers. It's all he does well. Defense now matters on the perimeter. He's awful. Chemistry. Stars playing together has become the new trend in the NBA. Yeah, he didn't get along with anybody. He's Will Smith. He had this run for about 6 years. And everybody's like, woo-wee.
Well, let's not discount Fresh Prince.
Okay, Fresh Prince. And then Independence Day. And then Men in Black. And then it's been bomb, 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 bomb.
Pursuit of Happiness was good.
Mello and Will Smith have figured one thing out. How to make money. They are great at making money because they're not making hits. They're not winning games. They're not getting me to a box office. They're not getting you to the finals. But those guys have figured out how to make money. Maybe there's a rule in life. Be really successful early, and then you can just quit working. Because I can't figure out Houston. All the things they're great at, and we finally gave them a pat on the back for, they went the other way. Finally played defense. Let's get Mello. Finally had great chemistry. Let's get Mello. Finally got the three down. Let's get Mello. He doesn't fit any of those. And they got boxed last night, and their front court defense was terrible.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I've made no bones about it. A lot of times fans can be dishonest. They say they like the underdog, but when you put the underdog in the Final Four, nobody watches. When you put the underdog in the, you know, basketball playoffs, nobody watches. You don't want underdogs to win. I watch games, and I look at the stadiums, and I see people's jerseys, and they always have the name of the star on the back of the jersey. Put TCU in a bowl game, nobody watches. Put Ohio State in a bowl game, everybody watches. You keep telling me what you like, but what you like, according to all the data, is stars. Baseball's got to be careful here. Analytics in baseball are becoming perilously close to becoming anti-star. Last night was great for the Dodgers because I was emotionally vested. Why? Because a star, Clayton Kershaw, who's a fading star, he didn't throw 97. He's got to rely on his curveball now. But he's a fading star. He's Michael Jordan at the end. He's Kobe at the end. He's Joe Montana at the end. But I'm emotionally invested because he's a star, and I've been watching him, and I've seen him live pitch six times. And you don't know if he can get the guys out in a big spot because he can't throw 98 consistently anymore. He's more 92 using the breaking stuff. And yesterday was great because we're all in it with him together. He's a star. We know him. We know his struggle. We know he was dominant. We know he struggled in the postseason. And now I am watching him go, okay, he's getting through this. He's through the third. He's through the fifth. Now he's to the seventh. It's great. I have a rooting interest. By the way, the Dodgers also have Manny Machado, who is very, very polarizing. Take a side. Yasiel Puig, polarizing. Take a side. You know who Milwaukee's star has been in this series so far? Their manager, Craig Counsell. He was boring as a player. I don't want to see him visit the mound 12 times. That doesn't interest me. You got to be careful about analytics. In the NFL and NBA, analytics are helping the stars. It's getting close in baseball where let's go to the bullpen early. No, let's not. Let's not go to the bullpen early. Defensive shift. Take hits away from power hitters. No. Get rid of the defensive shift. Just like hockey got rid of guys sitting in the crease. NBA said nobody in the line. After one batter yesterday, Craig Counsell comes out and pulls the pitcher to get an analytics edge. Now let's go to another commercial. Let's not. Let's go and see great pitchers pitch and great hitters hit. And I found myself yesterday emotionally wrapped up in Clayton Kershaw. I saw him be dominant and fail in the postseason. Now he's not a dominant. Wouldn't it be ironic if he succeeds in the postseason? If he wins a World Series? So, you know, I understand it makes everybody feel smart. I get that. And I understand that baseball's always had a chess match mentality. But over the last couple of days, I've talked a lot of baseball. Why? Because Jose Altuve was in a play, and Clayton Kershaw was pitching, and Mookie Betts made a play. And, oh, Manny Machado did that. I don't talk about those things with bullpen guys. Stars. Like this, I don't want, you know, remember the old Simpsons thing? I don't want baseball to become this.
As a pitcher, Cliff Lee is clearly superior to Zach Greinke.
Yes, I completely agree, with the following colossal exception. Before the fourth inning, after a road loss, in a dumb stadium. Then it's good to be Greinke, unless he's got a bunion, in which case he is notably ineffective.
Yeah, I don't want baseball to be that. Clayton Kershaw's a star. I fought the star. The night before, I saw Manny Machado, who was a star, and he was controversial. That's fun. That's what I want to see in the World Series. And I think I'm going to get it in the World Series, even though I felt Milwaukee was the better team the entire series. Yesterday, it just so happened that Clayton Kershaw gave you a great outing. Seven innings pitched. Three hits, one earned run, two walks, nine strikeouts. It was the old Clayton Kershaw. Actually, it was the new Clayton Kershaw. He's not as dominant in the regular season. He was dominant in the postseason. So, but I don't want to see all these analytics. I want to see Chris Sale, Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez. I don't want to see Joe West. I want to see Kershaw, Machado. It's not major markets. It's major stars. And Kershaw yesterday was fascinating. Because at the end of MJ's career, at the end of Brady's career, at the end of Favre's career, these are fast. We've watched these people for 10 years succeed, fail, triumph. Oh, I'm all in. These are like, you know, I'm all in on these guys. These are the stars of the sport. Let them be stars.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Everybody's talking about LeBron. How many games are going to win? How many minutes he's going to play? And I don't know. I'll make one prediction on the Lakers. That Brandon Ingram will become LeBron's favorite Laker, and he will emerge as the second best player on the team. That's my one prediction. Listen, the NBA gives you a lot of absolutes. 15 teams in this league are awful. I could name them. They have no chance to win the championship. You know, your Sacramentos, your Memphis. Phoenix is getting better, but they're not there. Dallas, Brooklyn, Knicks, Orlando, Chicago, Atlanta, Charlotte. 15 teams, absolutely no shot to win a championship. On most nights, not even that interesting. Then there's two rosters that are spectacular and that absolutely will be around in the end. Boston, great coach, great young players, great stars, great GM, great home court advantage. And the Warriors, great coach, great front office, great home court, great stars. I get a lot of absolutes. Okay, I got a lot, absolutely no shot to win a championship and absolutely be there in the end. The Lakers are kind of a mystery. You got a superstar, emerging young players. Some Lonzo, we're not sure how much he will emerge or fit. And Kuzma may not play as much as he thinks. And I think Ingram's a star. And then you got a bunch of wackos. I got a bunch of old castoffs. And crazy people. And Charles Barkley was talking about this on the Dan Patrick Show. This is the rare LeBron team. I don't even know what they are.
Well, what kind of team are they? Are they going to let those young guys play? Or are they going to put those old guys out there? That's why I didn't understand. Because those old guys are not their future. Ball, Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, that's their future. So I don't know what the Lakers are doing. Are they going to try to groom those young guys and go forward with LeBron, or are they going to play those old guys? I mean, I have no idea what the Lakers are doing. Are they a young team or they're an old team? And I think that's what I'm going to be watching for the most.
Yeah, my prediction is it's going to take them about 30 games to figure it out. Brandon Ingram will become the next star off of LeBron, and by the end, they will be a middle of the Western seed with a real chance and a real threat in the West to win a lot of games in the playoffs. That's my prediction, is that going to take a while. A, going to take a while. B, Ingram's going to become a star this year. And then C, in the end, they're going to mostly figure out what they are, have some limitations, but they're going to figure it out after the All-Star break.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
And with that, over three decades at NFL Films, senior producer, the most objective and enlightening voice this show brings on. His name is Greg Cosell. So I'm watching Tom Brady against Kansas City, and I know we're in an era now, Greg, where it's easier for quarterbacks, but the nonchalance of that 2-minute drill was, by any standards, Montana to Rogers, unbelievable. Does the film tell you that Brady's as good as anybody that's ever done the 2-minute drill?
He's really good, no question. You know, that's a hard question to answer because there's a lot of quarterbacks that have played. And I think 2-minute drills are always a function as well of good coaching, because the playbook is somewhat limited in a real 2-minute drill. So I think you get into issues where the plays you design against specific defenses, and defenses you pretty much can anticipate and expect, is so critical. Because the last thing you want to have in a 2-minute drill, in my view, and I know a lot of guys, Colin, make plays outside of structure, but you don't want it to become a fire drill. You don't want your quarterback just taking the snap and running around. You'd like to play within structure and not eat up time and keep moving.
Yeah, and he's done it so many times. There's no replacement for experience. He's been doing this for 15 years. If you're a dentist for 15 years, or an accountant, or a senior producer at NFL Films, you get really comfortable.
And no question. I mean, and look, he hit Gronkowski for 39 yards on that winning drive, and that was, you know, to me, that sort of encapsulated the entire matchup. They got Gronkowski matched on Josh Shaw, and it was a slot fade. And it wasn't a complicated concept or anything like that, but you have Gronk, and you have Brady making just a great throw.
Okay, so the team that both Peter King and Trent Dilfer told me this week, and they said, listen, everybody's fallen in love with the Rams. You may want to look at the Chargers. Phillip Rivers is having a spectacular year. Is his protection better? Is it the receivers? What do you see with the Chargers and Phillip Rivers?
I don't think there's much difference in the way Phillip Rivers has played for any number of years. I think that he's, in many ways, just like Peyton Manning has been. He's terrific before the ball is snapped. He has a great feel for what he's seeing. They're a difficult offense to play against in more recent years because of the size of their receivers. Now that they also have that back, Austin Eckler, who combines with Melvin Gordon, and Eckler is a terrific receiver who can detach from the formation. And they present problems in the intermediate and vertical passing game because they push the ball down the field. And Rivers has always been a turn-it-loose guy.
Yeah.
And I think now with big receivers, it really helps them.
Yeah, they really have some nice assets. They receiving coming into the year, we didn't know Mike Williams, if he'd return. He's been great. They when I watched them against Cleveland this week, they're a tough matchup.
They're a very tough matchup. They did something that you don't see very often in the league this particular week. They repeated plays consistently that were successful. And you normally don't see coaches just continually repeat plays, but they did that, and they did it very well.
Yeah, you know, I said this about the Packers. Is I watched that game with San Francisco, and I came out of it blown away by the development of the Niners' offensive line, which I think is way better than I thought it would be, with some of their young playmakers. C.J. Beathard is more than solid as a backup. And I watched Green Bay, and what does the film say? I don't see an elite team here. I see an elite intuitive quarterback saving them late in games, but what's the film say on Green Bay?
Well, I think they're working through a new defensive scheme and philosophy with Mike Pettine, and I think they're trying to figure that out right now. And that'll take some time because there's a lot of detail to a Mike Pettine defense. And it's tough to get in a short period of time. I still think, just in my view, I still don't think they play with a real strong philosophical sense of balance. It's an Aaron Rodgers offense, and when Aaron Rodgers is making phenomenal throws, which he's capable of any given week, I mean, some of those throws on that final drive, particularly the one to Equanimeous St. Brown, I mean, he literally placed it on the sideline. It was beautiful. When he's doing that, they can be really effective, and they can win, and they can score a lot. But I think there's an inconsistency to their offense because they rely so much on that, and so much of that reliance comes from Rodgers outside of structure, and that just can't be counted on.
Yeah. No, you've been saying this for years. So this weekend, I get the best defense in the league, Ravens, against one of the best offenses, the Saints. And what's going to be the Ravens' biggest challenge with Drew Brees, Peyton, and this Saints offense?
Well, I would turn it around. I would say that Brees and that offense will have a very big challenge against this defense because this is a defense that's outstanding when they blitz. They lead the league in sacks with 26. 15 of those 26 have come when they blitz. They're very, very good at showing pressure from one side of the formation and then forcing the protection to work that way. And Brees will change the protection when he sees that, but then they bring pressure from the other side. In fact, the Saints had a little bit of a problem with that when they played the Browns a number of weeks ago. You might remember that game. They won late. They didn't score many points, and they won late. And Brees did not throw for a lot of yards in that game because there's a lot of pressure. And this, I think that it'll be difficult. You know, Drew Brees is great. We know that. Could he go out and throw for 350? Of course he could. But I think tactically, this presents a difficult challenge for the Saints offense.
Yeah, Baltimore's a real team this year. You know, I was saying the other day about Dak Prescott, and we got to do our weekly Dak Prescott thing, is that he is mediocre, and how do I know? Because he's all over the map. He was great first year, not as good second, and this year, week to week, I don't know what I'm getting. You know, I watched that win over Jacksonville, and it doesn't have any resonance with me. I don't think he's going to come out and play that well. You know, I just find him to be the kind of quarterback, there's an Andy Dalton thing here, average quarterbacks are hot and cold, and he's hot and cold. I mean, did you take anything away from that win over Jacksonville?
Well, I would say that the Cowboys coaching staff did a much better job in this game. I've talked a lot about the fact that they needed more integrated route concepts, and they did that. They attacked the Jaguars' zone coverage concepts well. Now, Beasley was a big factor in this game, winning one-on-one. But I think the key thing is they're going to use Dak as a runner by design, and I think that's critical to them situationally, and I think they'll keep doing that, because even though Dak played a solid game, he didn't turn it over. That's the key thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think they can expect 250, 300-yard passing games on a weekly basis, so they have to sort of orchestrate and manufacture plays situationally. And I think Prescott's legs will be a big part of that going forward.
Yeah. I do like their defensive personnel up front. I think
oh, I do too.
Their linebackers are athletic. They move all over the field. They're pass rushers.
Like Van Der Esch?
I do. I think he's really athletic. And I think, so when I watch Dallas, I think the strength of their team is their athleticism and their front seven defensively. I don't think it's Zeke. I think it's their front seven defensively athleticism. I'm like, that's the next 5 years. That feels like the key to that team.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I mean, and I really liked Van Der Esch coming out of college. I thought he was a better player than Edmonds. Not necessarily a pure athlete, but a better player at this point.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Saquon Barkley, Odell Beckham. Barkley's putting up nice numbers. But if you looked at the film and you said, how do you stop the Giants? Who is more important for them between Beckham and Barkley? Who really makes this offense go to you? When it does
well,
go.
I can tell you what the Eagles thought.
Yeah.
They thought it was more about Beckham than Barkley. Keep in mind, Barkley had 229 yards of total offense, and they scored one touchdown. So the Eagles clearly thought by their coverage concepts, which were specifically geared to Beckham, that Beckham was far more critical. The thing about Barkley is he's incredibly spectacular. That's not in question, Colin. We all know that. We can see that. But he, at this point in time, and I'm not suggesting it's his fault, but the run game is not sustaining, and that's the issue. He'll make long runs, Barkley, but I think the game that was very representative of Barkley and the run game was the week before against Carolina, when he had a 20-yard run and a 30-yard run, and and his other 13 runs went for minus two. And I think as great as he is and spectacular as he is, it's hard to sustain offense like that.
Yeah, no, I've always felt there's a Reggie Bush quality to him. It's a fireworks show on three carries, and then it's just a lot of, it's a lot of 1 yard gains on the other 14. He's a spectacularly great, he's like an NBA player who dunks well. The yards he gets are fascinating. He's a home run hitter, but this was what he was in college. A majority of his runs, he's not blowing people, he's not running people
over.
No,
and I'm not going to put that on him, although I do think that he needs to learn as he plays a little more about the fact that 3 yards means something, but he's obviously spectacular.
Okay, Josh Rosen, Arizona quarterback, young rookie that most of us, I've watched every snap. I know his mom, he's from the area where I live.
We know him, we've talked to him.
Yeah,
you know him better than I, but I've been around him.
The nation's going to get to see him tonight. So far on tape, I think his offensive coordinator is super conservative, Mike McCoy. I wish they'd let it rip a little bit more, but what have you seen on film with him?
Well, I think they're concerned about their O-line. That's why.
Okay.
Because I think McCoy, at his core, likes to push the ball down the field, and you see a lot of those concepts and principles in their pass game. But in order to do that, you need protection. And then if you start getting caught up in 6- and 7-man protection concepts, then you have fewer eligible receivers that are releasing into routes, and then you have, 7 defenders for 3 receivers, and that's tough. So I think they're trying to figure this out because their O-line has been, to be kind, a work in progress. But Rosen's been very refined. He's very nuanced. He was inaccurate last week. This particular week, he threw the ball much better. And I think he looks comfortable in the pocket.
Yep.
He looks poised. And the word I just used, I think he looks refined.
Yeah. No, so do I. I think it is best so far. You're like, there's a lot of wow. He'll make a couple throws a game, and you're like, wow. But he's also a guy that doesn't slide particularly well. He's not that athletic, so you need good tackles, and they've got to upgrade. Now, I'm so tickled.
I did this because we did Mayfield last week, and, we did a little fog hat. I thought, with Sam Darnold, we need a little Led Zeppelin for this or something,
Yeah, so your play of the week features Sam Darnold, take it away.
Who, by the way, had a very good game last week. Not against a great defense, but that's irrelevant. It's still an NFL team. So let's start the play right now. And I'm sure you remember this, Colin.
Yep.
It was a touchdown to Chris Herndon, who, by the way, I like a lot. Liked him coming out of the U quite a bit. This was a play we see a lot in the NFL. It's a great concept. It sets up initially as a wide receiver tunnel screen, as we call it, to Robbie Anderson with Chris Herndon and Jordan Leggett. Two tight ends, by the way, out in front as potential blockers on what looks like a tunnel screen. So as the play starts, you can see that Anderson is all set. Darnold looks out there, looks like a tunnel screen all the way. And in fact, the two tight ends, they show as if they're going to block. So Nate Hairston and Darius Leonard, the two defenders over the tight end, they react hard to the screen look, and then you just send Herndon up the sideline, and it's really a pitch and catch kind of throw. This is an example of great coaching. You see it really well from this angle as well with Hairston and Leonard, and how they react so hard to the tunnel screen action because that's what they're presented with. So there's a deception element to this play, but it's really effective. And when you get this, it's an easy throw, and this is the kind of thing you want to do with a young quarterback to help him.
Oh, boy, that was nice. It should be noted, in all fairness, as much as I love Darnold, the games in which he's played well, they've generally had fairly good running afternoons.
Yep.
As well. So, like a rookie quarterback, he needs help. I don't think they have a great O-line or a great receiving core. I do think the tight end's good. And frankly, their running game has been surprisingly good. And I think that's one of the advantages Darnold's had so far.
No question. And he certainly was helped out week one when you want to get him off on the right foot by the play of his defense and special teams. And he's been up and down, but I think there's more ups than downs. And I think he's trending upward, clearly.
Good stuff. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Colin.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Over a decade in the NFL, a pro bowler drafted by the Bengals made it into a nice career. He was a seventh-round pick, 204th guy picked. So there was a play this week where Tyreek Hill's a great player, and he runs, gets a touchdown, and you know his momentum carries him to the wall in New England, and some fan flipped him off and threw beer on him.
Yeah,
and that I would imagine happened to you a lot.
I don't believe I ever got in. I remember vividly one time getting into a Pittsburgh fans. But they were actually pretty cool. It was during the course of the game. I actually would take them Gatorade. I'd be like, it'd be hot early season game. I'd be like, you guys thirsty? And I never forget taking them Gatorade. And I was like, God, I hope he doesn't throw this back in my face. And he didn't. But they talk to you super crazy, all fans.
TJ Houshmandzadeh, I'll throw this out at you. Is that in my experience, I had a situation years ago. This was like 20 years ago. I was in South Dakota. And I went jogging. And people waved to me. Hey. I was like, I thought they were like a cousin. I'm like, oh, people. I don't think this happens in Green Bay. I don't think it happens in most Midwest cities. But I think fans in these big Northeast cities, and I'm a coastal guy, but there are cities that are rougher. Pittsburgh's got nice people. It's got a Midwestern feel to it. Green Bay's got a Midwestern feel. Indianapolis has a Midwestern feel. I mean, you were around this league. Did you get treated harsher in certain cities?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's the
New York fans are rough.
You know what I chalk it up to is it's late in the game. You've had quite a bit to drink. The game's almost over, and he's drunk.
I am shocked. I'm not shocked by this at all because I think players now go on the road in the NFL. You guys almost predict it's coming.
Yeah, you if you play long enough, you've seen it all. You've heard it. You just kind of get used to it.
What I'm shocked by is players that tell me of the racial slurs. The idea that I'd be around 30 people and somebody would use a racial slur, every player I ever talked to said, oh, yeah, I heard those.
As long as they don't touch you, as long as you don't touch me, I'm fine. Because I'll go back at them
Did
verbally.
You hear slurs?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
It's 2018. I don't understand that.
Well, it was probably 2008, 2010 for me.
Not any better then. So with you now, Tyreek is TJ is going to, I think, bring up, he may take the guy to court.
He's looking into suing him. Yeah.
Would you sue a fan?
Nah, I wouldn't over that. No. I mean, he's just proving a point. You can say what you want to say. I'm a verbally say what I want to say. Just don't touch me. As long as you don't touch me, we're cool.
Okay. We're going to play a game. We call it a stat or bull stat. And we have a stat And if we think it's a legitimate stat that means something, it's a stat. If you think it's just a bunch of baloney and it's just a random stat that doesn't mean anything, then it's a bull stat. So, John, or Joy, or, okay, Joy is going to play it. Here we go. A stat or bull stat?
Real stat or bull stat. Okay. So, Sunday night, the Bengals face the Chiefs. This could be bad news for the Bengals. Since 2011, the year Andy Dalton was drafted, Dalton has the second worst winning percentage in night games behind only Mark Sanchez. So Dalton has just won 32% of his games at night. So TJ, does this mean that Andy Dalton can't handle the spotlight?
Nah, that's a bull stat. That's a bull. That's coincidence. And the good thing about it is, who did you say they play this weekend?
The Chiefs.
The Chiefs. Terrible defense. Andy Dalton gonna light them up.
Their offense is pretty good.
Their offense is really good. But Andy Dalton will be facing a defense who they can't stop a nosebleed. So it's going to be good for the Cincy offense.
So you think that's a bull stat?
Bull stat. 100%.
I think it's a real stat.
The Bengals going to beat the Chiefs.
Okay, he's 3-12 against Pittsburgh. Andy Dalton has a history of shrinking in the biggest games.
A lot of it, honestly. Well, come on. They should have won the game Sunday.
Oh, should have.
They should have won. Defense, make a play.
Should have, could have, would have.
Make a play.
Andy Dalton has shrunk in big games for years.
He didn't play great this past Sunday against Pittsburgh, but this Sunday, going against this defense, perfect recipe.
So you think it's a bull stat?
Bull stat, for sure, this weekend.
I think it's a real stat. Next one.
Okay, so the Eagles are 3-3, off to an okay start in their quest to repeat as NFC East champs. But there's a stat that doesn't bode well for Philly. No NFC East team has won back-to-back division champs since 2004. That's the longest stretch in any division. So, Colin, does this mean the Eagles won't repeat this year?
I think it's a bull stat. There are coincidences. Yeah, there are coincidences. It's been a very competitive division. Generally in this division, the two giant Super Bowl years in Philadelphia, the team that emerges about November, because weather plays a factor in this division, and a lot of teams start hot and then fade. This division has been up for grabs mostly for years, and whoever plays well and is healthy late wins, and that means you have to have depth, and Philadelphia has the most depth of good players. So the fact that this division is decided by a different team every year, I just think it's competitive, it's mostly even, and I think it's a bull stat.
I'm going to call that a real stat. Just, he made the argument for me. It's competitive. It's pretty much even. The Cowboys have the best defense in the division. They're fourth in the league in NFL defensively. The Redskins are playing pretty well. They're up and down. The Eagles play pretty well. They're up and down. The Cowboys play pretty well. They're up and down. All three of those teams can win it. I'd probably choose the Cowboys right now.
All right.
They have the best defense in the division.
It's just not just going off that win.
And by the way, Dallas's defense is up front, I would say this, is young. Their linebackers are young. Their pass rushers are young. Dallas got a very interesting.
Chris Richard has done a fantastic job with that defense. The Cowboys are very, very formidable defensively.
Okay, sticking with the NFC East, if you're an Eli Manning hater, you'll love this one. Among quarterbacks who have won 100 games during their career, Eli Manning has the lowest win percentage out of any quarterback ever. He's only won 51% of his games. So, TJ, does this mean it's time to put Eli out to pasture?
Oh, man. You know, be honest, if his name was Eli Mitchell, would he still be the starting quarterback?
Nope.
Of course not.
So you think it's a real stat?
One real stat. I mean, that's obvious. It's a real stat. If his last name was not Manning, he would have been a backup quarterback 3 to 4 years ago.
Totally, completely agree. And the other thing is, he's not only a Manning, but he's an incredibly likable Manning.
He's a nice guy. He seems to be a nice guy.
And there, listen, likability matters. Marcus Mariota, I think, is pretty average. I think he's likable, and I think Tennessee looks at Mariota, and they don't want to say what they really think, which is he's not as good as we thought. I think quarterback is a face of a franchise, and Eli is that droopy, sad face when you pulled him. So I think it's a real stat. I think Eli's been shot for 3 to 4 years.
Do you think they're regretting not taking your boy, Darnold?
Of course they are.
Saquon Barkley's having a great year, but it's not mattering. It doesn't matter at all.
Running backs change stats. They don't change outcomes. Darnold's changing outcomes. This is an outcome league. And bottom line is, Darnold is the difference this year.
You are forever associated with Sam Darnold.
Yes, I'm proud of that.
So the Chiefs are currently 5-1, but their defense definitely doesn't deserve much credit for that. In fact, how about this? The Chiefs have the worst defense of any team in NFL history through the first 6 weeks. They've given up 468.2 yards per game. So, Colin, does this mean Kansas City can't possibly win a Super Bowl?
That's a real stat. Now, they faced Big Ben and Brady, but in the end, the reason they can't stop anybody is because they don't have their pass rush right now outside of Dee Ford. Their secondary is a mess. Now, can they get better defensively? Yes, but you can't win a Super Bowl with this defense. Because, by the way, again, a lot of offenses look good in September and the first 2 weeks of October. Post-Thanksgiving is the real season, and you got to make stops. You have, by the way, last year, if you go to the playoffs, the Rams got stopped, and the Eagles got stopped by Atlanta and could have lost. And by the way, Brady got stopped on the final drive, and that's why Philly won. Defense will eventually matter in December and January, and unless Eric Berry gets healthy, you cannot win with this defense.
Bull stat. Because of what he just said, their best defensive player is Eric Berry. When he comes back, he's going to shore some things up. If Kansas City can win some games, which they're going to continue to, it's hard to play in Kansas City, man. It's loud. Offensively, you have to score with them. So it puts pressure on the opposing team's play caller to, I have to keep up with Kansas City's offense. So you start to get out of character and call plays and do things that you normally wouldn't do. The
and
way they put up points.
Has made some plays.
When they get Eric Berry back, they'll be a lot better. He'll shore some things up. Guys won't have to take as many chances. He'll make plays that other guys aren't making.
Remember, Eric Berry has been Gronk's toughest matchup. So if Eric Berry comes back, he took Gronk out of the last game. Because Gronk basically can be really tough for a linebacker or a safety. So the one thing Kansas City has, if Berry comes back, Andy Reid will put him on Gronk if they met. And he'll take Gronk out of the game. By the way, New England took Travis Kelce out when they played. These tight ends are hugely important.
If you have to go through Kansas City with those fans and that weather, it's tough.
Did you ever play baseball, by the way?
In high school.
Your daughter plays softball.
She plays softball, so I love baseball now.
Yeah. Well, I totally get it. So you're watching these games, the Dodgers. And
every inning, every game.
You're all in on it.
All in. We went to the first game when they played the Brewers. No, not – who they played the first round? The Dodgers. I'm getting old.
Braves.
The Braves. We went to that game. And we'll go to the first game, and they play at Dodger Stadium in the World Series.
Well, they're not there yet.
We'll make it. We'll win. We're going to win tomorrow.
We'll win tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm a huge baseball fan, though, man. I love baseball.
All right. I figured you played. Your daughter's a scholarship athlete baseball player.
Yeah, she can play a little bit. First college game tomorrow.
By the way, have you seen Arizona tonight on Fox? Denver is at Arizona. Have you seen Josh Rosen yet play around a little bit?
Number one.
No, but I mean, you saw him here in L.A. Have you seen him for Arizona yet?
Oh, yeah, I've seen him play a couple games.
What do you make of him?
You know, up and down. He's like any rookie quarterback. He doesn't have the offensive line. He doesn't have the weapons around him that the other rookie quarterback has. He's a good running back, but David Johnson isn't having a great year.
Yeah, their O-line's the problem.
And he doesn't have – he has Larry Fitzgerald, but Fitz isn't getting the ball. You see his dad comes out and complains that he's not getting the ball much. It's the good thing they play Denver tonight. The last two games, Denver's given up over 200 yards on the ground. Great recipe for a rookie quarterback to have a great game.
Yeah.
Hand the ball off to David Johnson. You can get single high coverage. Easy to find reads for the quarterback.
Yeah. I'll take Arizona tonight in a close game at home. They're pretty conservative. Bad O-line, I agree. TJ Hushman's out of good seeing you, bud.